everyone. We're 8 minutes late, but we are here. And who are we? We are two men named Dan in our 30s, and we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, space lasers, zombies, dragons, and such things as this. Dan B, how are you doing?
I'm good. I agree with everything you said, except that we were late. Wizards are never late. They arrive precisely when they mean to. And so do we. So hello, everybody in the chats. And apologies that our start time is later than you expected, but perhaps not later than we meant. I'm glad to be here. We have some fun stuff to talk about today because there is just television out there. So much television. It's exhausting in my soul, but also exciting. How are you, Dan?
I'm good. It is. It does feel like the TV gods have kind of front loaded this year. I can barely keep up, but I can't say I'm not excited and interested.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I will do two things. First, I will say hello to everyone watching. Hey, Robert.
Hola.
Hey, Victor. Hey, Ben. Hey, hello, everybody else. Feel free to comment. We love reading your comments and responding to you. And B, why don't we dive right into it? Little preview. We're going to talk about some Game of Thronesy, House of the Dragony stuff, George R. R. Martin stuff. We're going to talk about the Wheel of Time. We're going to talk about The Last of Us. We're going to talk about Daredevil. We have so much stuff. By the end of it, you will be breathless with excitement.
Yeah, we have a lot to get through today. So we're gonna skim through Westeros because the Westeros news kind of on the small side, and we want to talk about the shows that are on right now. So let's go right through that. First up, we have a new set photo from the set of House of the Dragon season three, that was taken by Unbox PhD, who apparently is a super spy that just takes photos and HBO can't do anything about it.
Don't look up.
What is this, Dan? What are we looking at?
It's a city, Daniel. I don't know. It's King's Landing. It's Tumbleton. It's some kind of a town where the characters of House of the Dragon will go in season three.
Yes.
It's probably King's Landing or Tumbleton. Maybe Old Town. I don't know.
Yeah, those are the... I wonder if we're going to see Old Town in season three. So Old Town, obviously, important location. We're meeting more Hightowers. Ryan Condal, the showrunner, has said Ormond Hightower, Otto's nephew, will be... I think the quote was like the biggest new character since season one, which
is curious, right?
It is curious. I'm not opposed to that. I think that could be really interesting, especially if he's like a, almost surrogate father or uncle for Daeron, the Targaryen who hasn't been in the show, whose name I almost forget. But yeah, so anyway.
Looks like a Dillard's.
Victor, I do not know what a Dillard's is. But I'll take your word. Oh, okay. I'll take all your words for it. But yeah, so presumably Tumbleton, Old Town, one of these cities. Let's move on. So our next image is not a set. This is the Great Sept, which has been seen in the past seasons. And it's an actual location in Caseres, Spain. But... they're rebuilding it seemingly this year on the backlot, which is our next image. Once again, Unbox PhD, Ninja of the Skies, taking these images for all of us. That looks a lot like the front kind of entryway to the Great Sept. The stairs are very similar, etc. Why do you think they would be using the money to rebuild a set like this rather than going to Spain, Dan?
Well, Dan, I'm glad you asked that question because it gives me an excuse to share what I think is a philosophical point you can apply to pretty much anything in your life. If you ever think about why anybody or any organization or any company does thing, 99% of the time, the answer is money. So I'm going to guess that for whatever reason, building a set in their home studio of England was less expensive than loading up into a bunch of planes and trains and automobiles and going to Spain. Maybe there are more duties. Maybe there are more taxes. I don't know. But if you want to answer the question of why did a company do something, the answer is probably money.
That's fair. Let me propose a different answer, which also may, in a way, well, maybe it's money, kind of. So we know that in season three, spoiler from Fire and Blood, the action is going to be coming to King's Landing. We know at the very least that Rhaenyra is going to take King's Landing, presumably at some point in season three. There are also some riots that happen once she takes King's Landing in the book. And we don't know if the show's going to get into any of that material. We saw kind of it start to set that up with the bread riot last season. So my thought when I saw this, that they were building this set, was maybe they are planning to deface the front of the Great Sept in some action-packed scene where blood is shed and people die and stairs get broken and they can't actually break the steps of that historical building in Spain. So they had to make it again themselves. But it could, maybe if they had enough money, they could break the historical building in Spain.
No,
but
it's, you're the right. They don't. I'm embarrassed. I'm arrogant. I've been torn down by a man whose insights outstrip mine. That makes a lot more sense.
I mean, that the money thing is fair, though. Depending on what they're trying to do, it may as well also be a lot cheaper to do it in studio. Benjack's got a good point here, too, which is in a behind-the-scenes video from season two, they mentioned how Caceres, the city where they film in Spain for King's Landing, it's a World Heritage Site, so they're limited in terms of fire effects or blood and stuff like that. And presumably, there will be lots of blood and fire this season, possibly even on those very steps. So
I will say, there was a time when I would have said I'd be surprised if they got to the riots in season three. But now that I know they have to crunch things, I mean, there's not a lot that isn't possible.
That's exactly how I feel. I would be shocked, I say, if we get to the storming of the Dragon Pit in season three. But I think we could see some early riots to start to lay the groundwork for the storming of the Dragon
Pit. I mean, it would be a fun finale. Also,
it could.
This isn't going to be one of those episodes where I rag on House of the Dragon, but man, it just, I remember I did not like that penultimate season one episode when I saw it, when the dragon came up to the dragon pit and flew away. And one of the reasons was, but you have a big destructive dragon pit scene coming up later in the story. Why would you blow it this early? But whatever, it's not going to be one of those episodes. What's next?
That's right. Next, we're going to very quickly run through the director lineup, which is reportedly out there. I believe Westerosi's on Twitter/X put this up. I am not sure of this, their source.
It's not like foolproof, but I think this is reasonable.
Yeah, so basically the directors, I'm going to read through them. Then we can talk very briefly about the shape of the season. Episode one is by Lonnie Peristere.
Who is episode, a man.
Yeah, so Lonnie Peristere.
FYI, Lonnie.
Lonnie, yes. And Lonnie Peristere did the Red Sewing in season two.
And Warrior, whoop whoop.
And Warrior. And then episodes two, three, and four are all directed by Claire Kilner, who... Sure. Did that episode you were just ragging on, but also Rhaenyra the Cruel. You had a good insight with this when you wrote about this, that Claire Kilner really delivers if the writing is there, and if not, there's only so much she can do. Then episode five is Nina Lopez Corrado. Six is Lonnie Peristere again. Seven, Nina Lopez Corrado again. And then the finale, episode eight, is Andrich Parekh. And I apologize if I said your name wrong. Dan, what do you make of this? Are there insights to be gleaned?
Yeah, they're really easy ones, I think. Lonnie Peristere, who directed Warrior, which is a great show you should all go watch on Max and Netflix, did the Red Sewing Big Action episode. So we know that there's going to be... The first episode will be the Battle of the Gullet. He's a big action guy. Just makes sense. Doesn't mean that his other one is also a big action one, but they like to have multiple action scenes. Maybe the Battle of Tumbleton episode six. I could see that if they want to load them up with action scenes. Claire Kilner's dependable. I'm sure she can do stuff. Nina Lopez Corrado is a pretty new one. She's directing The Last of Us, which is in season two. So you've already seen whatever she did.
You know what episode?
I do not know what episode.
Okay, fair.
But she did. And that season's pretty well directed. And yes, then... Andrzej Parekh directed Succession, which is great, and he directed the House of the Dragon episode last season where the bread riot happened, which was a really good one. I thought I liked the direction of that one a lot, so I'm down for that.
Yeah, totally. I think this does tell us, like you said, the Battle of the Gullet is probably the season premiere. Claire Kilner, I think, especially does quiet scenes between characters well, like smaller scale scenes really, really well. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of puzzle pieces moving around the board in those first, those second, third, fourth episodes. Ben Jack, thank you. So Nina Lopez Corrado is doing the finale of The Last of Us Season 2, which I have seen. It is a very good episode. So that means it is kind of a coin toss with 5, 6, 7, where the big action beats could fall. Cause they've, Condal has said they're doing four major events from Fire and Blood. So I think any of those three episodes, you know, could have Tumbleton, could have whichever other ones they choose. I'm kind of wondering if we're going to see Sunfire this season, you know, the, whatever ill-fated knight, I forget which one it is, a Mutant, I think, goes and tries to kill Sunfire while he's chilling in the forest. They have lots of options. There's also the Battle of the Red Fork, the fish feed, plenty of choices here. But you have any other things you want to say about these directors before we move on? Because we are trying really damn hard to get to the shows we're watching right now.
Best of luck.
Nice.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro plus tax. For a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Okay, so this one just happened today. And it makes me a little sad. I won't lie. So George R. R. Martin, he spoke to Time Magazine, presumably about the dire wolves that were resurrected or not, depending on your view of the science. And they couldn't resist asking a question about the Winds of Winter and just how's that going, George? And how he felt about people who've been trolling him online by saying we got real dire wolves before the Winds of Winter. Martin said, that's the curse of my life here. Presumably about people asking him about this anytime he does anything. But he, what he said about this is, there's no doubt that Winds of Winter is 13 years late. I'm still working on it. I have periods where I make progress and then other things divert my attention, like, quote, deadlines for HBO. However, Martin thinks people seriously overestimate, quote, seriously overestimate how much attention and time he gives to his various investments, like his bookstores or movie theaters. And then he said the trip out to tour Colossal Biosciences was only around 4 days total. He went, he talked to them a bunch. He presumably saw a wolf or two, and then he ate barbecue and went home. So what do you think of this, Dan? Fair to be asking him.
Of course, it was funny. He's just it was funny. He's like, you know, I own a bookstore. I don't actually like ring you out when you come and buy a book.
Yes,
like I own a theater. I'm not the projectionist. Like it doesn't really distract me that much. And I did think it funny that he said he went to Dallas for the direwolf thing. Which part of me was like, wait, did he just reveal the location of the secret ecological preserve? I don't think he did. I think it's like the headquarters. But hey, look, if that is where they are. And somebody goes and poaches the direwolves and makes a direwolf pelt.
Wow.
Like, I would pay a lot of money for it.
Wow. Okay. You're saying you want people to Ramsay Bolton these direwolves. I see how it is. Horrible.
You wouldn't want direwolf slippers?
No. No, I would not. I want them to live happy lives doing whatever they're doing.
Well,
but I do think you're right. I had the same reaction when I saw the Dallas thing. I was like, did he just say the thing that they've been avoiding saying?
I don't think so.
But all the pictures of these direwolves are like snowy. So presumably it's somewhere way farther north than Texas. But anyway, that's what's new in Martinland, in Westeros, in all those places. Now, shall we get over to Randland and talk about the Wheel of Time? What do you think?
I have a question. Is there a name for the place the Wheel of Time takes place? People call it Randland. Does that place have a name, like Westeros or Middle Earth or
no?
Here,
I am pretty sure there is not one, honestly, because I've gone back and forth on this too. And yeah, Randland is just what it gets called. I think very largely because there is not a place. Yeah. Or not a name for it. Hold on. Vamp for a minute, Dan.
Sure. Ooh, vamp. I'll vamp you. Okay. The Wheel of Time. It's almost done. The finale airs tonight. Victor says it's Watnia, which is also a pretty good one.
Nice.
The Westlands, the Wetlands, and Randland. I like
all true. All true.
I have heard the Westlands, although that might not include everything. Whatever. The finale is tonight. It's right. It's Earth, says Jeffrey. Australia.
Whoop. I think you muted yourself, Dan. I think you were so enthusiastic you unplugged your mic. So now it is I who shall vamp. I still can't hear you. So if you guys can hear Dan in the chat, tell me and I'll stop talking. So yeah, we do not know what the world of the Wheel of Time is called. Many jokes have been made about it. I was getting my World of the Wheel of Time book to try to find it. But yes, there is no name in there. Are you back, Dan? Nope. Nope. I think your mic plug came loose when you gestured while. Oh, okay. Fair. Anyway, I'm going to keep talking. We'll see. We'll hear him when he comes back. But the Wheel of Time is coming back for its third season finale. It airs tonight at midnight Pacific time. And we have been devouring this season. I think on a lot of different fronts, it has been one of the most effective fantasy adaptations that we've seen. Oh, I hear some kind of noise. Is it Dan?
Hello?
Yeah, he's back. Victor says you've taken the black, but now, you know, they don't take a vow of silence for when they take the black, but neither do you, damn it. Welcome back.
Good to be back. We've all loved it. I think we can all agree that this season has been a marked improvement on the first two. I would say it is now the best high fantasy show on TV, and that's not a small accomplishment because there are quite a few. We have House of the Dragon, we have The Witcher, we have The Lord of the Rings, The Wheel of Time. I have enjoyed The Wheel of Time probably the most this season, especially. It's felt richer, it's deeper. I've liked the characters more. I like all the tones they've brought in, like kind of balancing the action with the comedy, with the drama, with the lore and the mythos, which is a key part of any like high fantasy series. Like part of the appeal of high fantasy is that it has all this backstory and like things to learn about it. The place names, the characters, the histories, the magics and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when a show or a book series gets you to the point when you want to go learn more about it, it's doing something right. And The Wheel of Time's at a point where I actually want to know and go learn about Ilion and Saldea and all these things that I keep saying. It kind of reminds me of what I was like when I first got into Game of Thrones, and I would like go down wiki holes and figuring out about the Children of the Forest and all these like little things. It feels The Wheel of Time is at that point. And that is great for it, but also a little scary because we haven't heard whether or not the show is renewed for a fourth season and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely the big question, is will Amazon renew it? I think, you know, we talked about this earlier in the season, that there was kind of that mandate from Jeff Bezos of like, bring me the next Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And as Wheel of Time has gotten into this season, it's really kind of hit me over and over again that it's like, oh, this is the closest they are going to get to that. But do they know what to do with it well enough to really capitalize on it? Like, can they throw their whole weight behind it and really help it soar as well as it could? Because I think Victor says Wheel of Time is now as good as Game of Thrones season two. And I think that's kind of a pretty fair comparison. I think it's a little bit better than season two of Thrones, but it's not quite the level of, well, I think the set pieces, absolutely. I think the set pieces and the visual aspect of it, maybe the politics and the script are not quite as razor sharp, but I do think The visual language of the show is arguably better than season two of Thrones.
Okay, I can agree with that. The visuals take a big step up. Again, we've talked about how the Wheel of Time has been kind of hampered in these first two seasons by things beyond its control, whether it's COVID or the actor who played Matt taking a rain check on his career. All with those roadblocks gone, it really has proven that it can walk the walk and talk the talk if it's just allowed to be itself. Exactly. And the visuals are splendid. I'll agree with you there. I think Game of Thrones season two is a really good point of comparison. There's no shame in being that good.
No, I'm not saying there's shame in being that good. I think it is a good comparison. And I think it's not quite, you know, for a lot of people, one of the peaks, the first real peak of Thrones was late season three and then season four, sure. I think.
Yeah.
So there's still room for Watt to grow to get into that kind of realm. But I think it will always be a different show too. Like, it is a more colorful, more magical, more fantastical show. And I think it is very much to its benefit that it has leaned into all of those elements instead of, you know, trying to just Game of Thrones it up, which we've seen from some other fantasy shows that I can't even think of right now, but it's happened a bunch of times in the past half a decade of a studio taking a fantasy property and like making it darker and grittier and dirtier to try to appeal to the Game of Thrones crowd. Wheel of Time is really doing the Wheel of Time, and it's doing it really well. And I think the last episode, Golden Eyes, was awesome. It was nice to see it just commit to a full battle length episode of Perrin defending the Two Rivers, really let us get, you know, a proper episode with Perrin. It's been really interesting to me to watch this show with, so my wife she hasn't read the books. So to see when she starts like clicking with different characters, because Perrin's one she like didn't care a whole lot about before this point, I think, which is probably true for a lot of non-readers. And then this episode, it's like, oh, starting to really get a lot more invested because finally we have the time with him for him to have a whole episode where he's doing all this dramatic stuff and he's got a love interest and, you know, he's making noble decisions. And yeah, I think Wheel of Time has really shown that it, if it's given the leeway to keep going, it will do a good job. So I just hope it gets that chance.
I mean, the pattern is clear, right? Not to make a pun. That season two is better than season one. Season three is better than season two. Okay. So let's keep going and see how high this bird can fly. I do agree with Victor that the show could use a red wedding moment, something that makes you tell your non-nerd friends, oh, but you gotta see this show. I do agree that it's come pretty close at this point. The Ran goes to, I still want to call it Ruidian. City, where he sees all these visions of the past, was to me very effective. It is so committed to the mythology of the Wheel of Time specifically, and it is kind of so in the weeds of the lore that it might not have that same kind of breakout power. But that's also what makes the show special. I completely agree with you. It's not Game of Thrones, is not Lord of the Rings. It feels like a proper Wheel of Time show. Even though there are differences, even though they've made changes, it does feel like it's an adaptation of the books, not an adaptation of the books that's trying to ape another successful thing. And that is to its benefit.
Absolutely.
But yes, it could use, and I don't know if it will actually have this, nor does it need it. Any show could use a red wedding moment. Every show wants the bit where everyone talks about it and then you tell your friends to go watch it. But
yeah,
if the Wheel of Time, I don't think it should reach that if it doesn't come naturally. I think it should keep doing what it's doing.
Yeah, I think that's the tricky thing. You know, the Wheel of Time is a very long, sprawling series.
Yeah.
And the red wedding, you know, that is such a specific, like, cultural zeitgeist type thing that like is there a red wedding moment in the Wheel of Time? I don't think there's one that is, you know, part of what made the red wedding so effective was that it was just utterly shocking because Martin specifically said, like, what's the least predictable thing I can do? Let's do that. And killed Ned Stark. And then was like, what's the next least predictable thing I can do? Kill the son who was going to avenge him. You know, he specifically, like, designed the story with that framework to surprise people. I don't know that Robert Jordan really did that. There are huge moments coming down the road. I think season four, in my opinion, the shape of the next few seasons will become clearer to readers after this finale. But I think season four could potentially have some really big moments, including at least one shocker, probably two shockers. But again, the magic is so central that it's part of why Thrones was as successful as it was because it could appeal to the non-magical people. Like, there's a term for this in book publishing that is evading me, but like, when a series reaches outside its normal demographic, like Harry Potter did this too, where it appealed to more than just kids who would read, you know, books about a wizard. Like, their families were reading it. Everyone was reading it. Thrones was kind of similar, but on television. I don't know that Wheel of Time will ever do that. But I do think there are, if it keeps going, like, we're going to get those large moments, definitely season four and five. I think we'll probably have some of the biggest ones from the book. So renew it, Jeff.
It should be the best fantasy show it could be.
Yes.
I think part of the appeal of the Wheel of Time has always been its enormous size. And I think in order to make the most of this show, they need people at the top who have the vision to see that the completed show, all eight or whatever seasons of it, will be this monolithic accomplishment of this huge story front to back that will live on in the opposite of infamy forever. And I think that kind of long-term planning does not come naturally to studio executives. So I think Rafe Judkins seems to have it. Like, the way he's talked about how he's thinking about the future and how he's thinking about rearranging things, he seems to have a really strong vision. But his task will be convincing I'm sure, decent, fine people in suits that they should sign on to the vision. By the way, speaking of the finale tomorrow, you said the ship of the suits will become clear. Should we do some teasing? Because I see that we have some Wheel of Time fans in the chat. A lot of you are making references to the book specifically. And do you think these fans of the Wheel of Time are going to be happy or sad with tonight's finale?
I think probably a bit of both. So a few weeks ago, for anyone in the chat who maybe watches The Dusty Wheel, they had Rafe Judkins on after Ruidian. And he basically said he thinks this will be one of the more controversial episodes of the season. And I think he's definitely right. I know we can't talk about it much, you know, we'll have a full review, recap, all sorts of stuff about this episode up on the site tomorrow. But I do think there are going to be things fans love and things they're going to have to sit with for a minute and sort through their feelings. That's my opinion. What about you, Dan?
Oh yeah, I have not read as many of the books as you have, but even I'm watching the finale and being like, ooh, I know they're changing some things. Now, personally, again, I think they are like surgical strategic changes that seem to have like intent behind them. There's this thing you can feel like in sort of, I'm going to say it again, in House of the Dragon, when they change some things from the book and it feels like they're just subbing in a story they came up with for the story of the book. Whereas I'm seeing these changes in Wheel of Time, and there are some tomorrow, and I'm reading what you're writing about them, folks who know more about the books, and I'm like, okay, so they are changing some things, but it's with an eye toward the greater shape of the story and preserving what they can of this big, massive 14 book series. Silvani, I don't know, I was just born that way, and I assume Daniel was too. So that is a very positive thing, but yeah, I am sure that some of these changes will rattle some cages. But yeah. I think it's strong enough to still please people overall. I agree. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I agree with that. I think it's still a great episode. And I think people are going to be talking about this one for a while. Excited to talk about this one. And I agree with you about the changes being surgical, strategic. That has kind of been a theme of the way the Wheel of Time has been adapting. Like, sure, there have been things I haven't always loved, but I think looking at it, it has never felt like, oh, they don't get it. They're doing this because they don't get the story, or they're missing something crucial about it, which is different than like, and not to just rag on other shows, but my easy example for this is The Witcher season 2, where they said this publicly. This is not hearsay, but basically that they thought that book was too boring to adapt straight to television. So they made up a whole, most of the second season storyline, because they just didn't think it would be a good thing to adapt. And then they rolled that back in season 3 and included like two of the biggest things from the previous book that they just didn't bother with. So I've never gotten that feeling from the way the Wheel of Time is adapting things. I think I give this show so much grace about how it is having to do adaptation, both because of the real world physical limitations it has faced, like COVID, Barney Harris leaving, which caused a whole rewrite of the entire second season, all that sort of stuff. But also the fact that they are trying to do a 14, 15 book series in around 8 seasons of television. There is no way they can do a straight adaptation of this story. Like, full stop. Like, it was always going to have to make changes. And as Overall says in the chat, Rafe is a fan of the books. He's just taking the bird's eye view of it. Sure. I think that is totally right. I think that's totally on point. And that comes through in the material, right? Like, they're including so many tiny little details that it's like, if you weren't fans of this book, you would not bother doing 90% of the things you're doing. Like, it's obvious that you know what you're up to. So yeah, I think people are going to enjoy this one, but I do think they're going to have a lot of opinions, and I think it will inspire a lot of discussion.
Yes, we are both co-signing the changes to come, but just the fans in the chat know that you're going to be surprised at a couple of points.
Yeah.
And come on back next week. Let's talk about them in detail. I also agree with Robert and Victor and everyone who's talking in the comments about how the Wheel of Time is such a fantasy-ass fantasy show that it might have a little more limited appeal. I think that's really accurate. And something like Game of Thrones, which broke out. And I think the key is to just accept that and embrace it. Like, be the best fantasy-ass fantasy show you can be. There's no shame in that when it's done this well and with this much love. And when it is a success, it's not a success on the size of Game of Thrones. It's not, but it's still a success. It's still doing well. And that's still really worth doing, especially when it's this good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I hope that they get a... All right, Joshua Templeton saying they could have made an actual adaptation by not adding the nonsense they did. Two episodes of a Warder Bond that they ignored how it works in later episodes. I don't know how to tell you this, Joshua, but I'm sorry, I don't agree with you. I think the thing we have seen time and time again with the Wheel of Time is that they make changes. People go, why would they do that? That doesn't make sense. And then a season later, 6 episodes later, people are like, oh, that's why they did it. And I think at this point, that pattern has repeated enough times that, like, the show's not running just on outraging book fans. And I know, because I know a bunch of people who haven't read the books who are really into it. So yeah, I mean, Wheel of Time, it is catching on and growing an audience in a way that I have not necessarily seen, let's say, The Rings of Power catch on, or sure, The Witcher, which, you know, it does have an audience, but that one has outraged a few different sections, and then Henry Cavill left, so the people who were there just for Henry Cavill are mad too. So yeah, I think the Wheel of Time deserves the benefit of the doubt, and I definitely want to see where it goes from here. So hoping it gets renewed.
Let's go. I think someone asked about does it have enough to justify the budget? I'm looking for my article I wrote about that. We don't have exact numbers because Amazon is stingy with that kind of thing.
Yes.
But at least from what we can tell, it's definitely found a big audience. I'm going to try and leave a number, here we go. An article here where I've pieced together what I could about it. And then, other thoughts, but they left.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have a good night. Have a good time.
Yeah, I think Light Blinded Fool said more than well enough budget wise, astronomically better in that regard than Rings of Power, for example. And I do recall seeing an article breaking this down that basically Rings of Power has had a bigger return for Amazon, but not relative to its budget. Like relative sure. to its budget, Wheel of Time is very competitive to it. Mm-hmm. So I think the answer is yes, but like you said, it is hard to really be sure because Amazon is so cagey with the data. And yeah, like Overell says, so many good payoffs from the changes, and the changes are also part of the lore in a new way, new turning of the wheel with the same characters. My big example of this is Moiraine losing her powers in season 2. I hated that. Thought that was an awful change that leaned into one of my least favorite tropes, which is we don't know what to do with this powerful character. Yeah. Let's take their powers away. And it was doubly troubling because you're taking the most powerful woman on your show and doing that to her. And it didn't happen in the books. But anyway, the show had justified that retroactively by now having Rand be the one to release her, teaches us about Weaves being tied off, ties her more tightly to him, where her belief in him this season is going to make more sense, all sorts of stuff like that. So yeah, the Wheel of Time. It's good.
Yeah, rock on.
Watch it. And Jeff Bezos, please renew it so we can watch it more. You have any closing?
Shop on your website. No, let's move on to
your website. If you renew it.
What else do we talk about? What else is good in TV? Because actually there's quite a bit.
Well, what else are we watching? I guess the big one we need to talk about is The Last of Us, right? The Last of Us Ooh. Premiered this week. Ooh. I feel like I've had a hard time keeping track of it just because, well, one, I have already seen the whole season, but also because The Wheel of Time is airing its finale. So how are you feeling about The Last of Us, Dan? Episode 1, it's out right now.
I enjoyed it. The Last of Us is a bit more of a water cooler show, this big giant zombie drama. People are talking about it a lot on the digital water cooler, Twitter/X. And yeah, the premiere came out. I liked it. Moody, beautiful, good acting. I'm liking a lot of the new cast. I like Catherine O'Hara as Gail, the therapist. I like Isabella Merced as Dina, the town lesbian. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm liking really... it.
And we've seen the rest, so we want to tell you how crazy it's going to get, but we can't, but know that it gets better.
Yeah, I think that this is a really good season. It's interesting. Victor says this was about the Wheel of Time, but I think it kind of applies to The Last of Us a little bit too. It feels like they streamlined the story a bit this season, which I think is part of why it had so much better for me, a non-reader. Victor said about Wheel of Time. That's a little how I felt about The Last of Us as someone who's played the game, which is like a 50-hour thing. This is only 7 episodes this season, but the premiere, which is out, I really enjoyed, like you said, the new cast members are great. The chemistry between Isabella Merced and Bella Ramsey is just off the charts. Like that for me is the new Joel and Ellie chemistry, where it's like, oh, people are going to absolutely love this. I really like Caitlin Dever as Abby. I do think it's interesting that they front loaded learning who Abby is and why she is so mad about Joel, right? Like that's like the first scene of the premiere. So that was an interesting choice to me. The game kind of strings this out and makes it a reveal. But yeah, I think the one coming up, people are going to be talking about as well. I think we've got a very good season on our hands. Yeah. So,
and if you've played the game, you know why you're going to be talking about the next episode on Sunday. You already know the thing you're expecting to happen will happen, and people are going to be very upset about it, even though everyone knows it's coming. It's going to be a good time, and some crazy things you don't expect to happen will also happen.
That's a good way of putting it. Yes, all of that. what else are we watching? I see someone, Victor, in the chat saying Black Mirror is pretty good. USS Callister sequel was good, not better than the original, but worthy. I also started Black Mirror. I watched the first episode, and holy shit, was it timely. Have you seen it, Dan? You haven't seen it yet, right?
I haven't. I will watch that USS Callister sequel at some point. I just gotta find the time.
So I haven't seen the Callister sequel. That's the finale. It's like an hour and a half. The first one is called Common People. It's got Rashida Jones. And it is basically, if you've ever subscribed to a streaming service and then watched as they've raised the rates on you, it's going all to right, hit fun. In that very classic Black Mirror sort of way. So that one is really, really good, but also very depressing. And I got real sad for a while and haven't gone back to Black Mirror yet, but I will, because it was really good. But also, whew, when Black Mirror hits the social issues, it really can hit them hard like few other shows. So yeah, that's the main other one I've been watching. Devil May Cry, I see Craig said. What do you think of it, Craig? I did enjoy Devil May Cry. I have some reservations about how it lives in... you know, conversation with the game, will say there are things it did that I don't think are very much in the spirit of the games, and others that very much are. But on the whole, I enjoyed watching it. Dan, what else have you been into?
The chat seems to be digging Black Mirror this season. I got to check it out.
That first episode, dude, the first episode,
I'll watch it. That sounds
it is intrigued. Fire. It's just depressing fire.
I mean, if you're making a sci-fi show about kind of a morality fairy tale, but the dangers of technology, it probably should be depressing. A lot of depressing stuff to go around. Speaking of depressing, I watched the finale of Daredevil Born Again the other night. And you know what? Now that the season is over, I'm going to give that show a round of applause. That show really? Did a good job of feeling not like a pointless revival. It actually did have something to say and do. I didn't like love it back to front. There was a little bit of dithering in there, but that finale especially, I think the Daredevil Born Again may be the most prominent anti-Trump, anti-fascist show on TV.
Really?
It's on Disney Plus. It's a Marvel. Dude, it was not subtle. Like, the Kingpin is a very, very obvious metaphor for Trump. Stomping all over due process. It rang especially loud in the wake of the recent events,
yeah,
where he's like not giving the immigrant due process. Like, the cops are turned into a private police force. The show is very anti-cop. They even engage with the phenomenon of real police officers kind of incorporating the Punisher symbol on their police cars and their like armbands, because they consider themselves vigilantes. Like, they got directly into that. It was all really, really direct. In a way that actually I kind of admired. Like, I didn't expect the sort of boldness from a Disney Plus Marvel show, the sort of kind of out and out resistance. But it was interesting. It wasn't boring.
Yeah.
And it's still a Marvel show. It's still, you know, it's got to make some leaps of logic. It's like, oh, you got shot 18 times up in a window. Sure, whatever. Superhero show. Fine. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. And I want to give them a round of applause for swinging big. Oh, and Karen comes back.
Hey, well, that's good at least.
And actually has something substantive to do.
That's good.
I know that you were a big fan of the old Daredevil show, and I know that it was a little weird because they wrote Karen and Foggy out of the show like right at the beginning. But I will say what happened with them is a driver of the whole season.
Okay.
And it looks like they're setting up Karen to be a bigger thing next season because she's a big part of the finale, and she was deeply embedded in events. So I guess she is coming back. I don't know. Okay. That's kind of weird how they got rid of them, but they're still a big part of it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a solid series that actually felt like there was a reason for it to exist. And I think whenever you revive something or make a sequel to something, it's always like, okay, do we need this? Or is this just because the last thing was popular, so we want it to be popular again? Like, this one actually justified its existence.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is really great to hear, because you know, this has kind of been the thing we come back to over and over again with Marvel, with Disney. Are they just making it because they need, you know, a new thing? And finding out that it is, like you said, it justified its existence really well. That the Foggy Karen thing, I could see that working. You know, they needed to reintroduce Daredevil and Fisk as Disney characters in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can get into the wider range. Like, I've seen clips of the Punisher in the finale. I'm sure he was only in parts of this season. He wasn't like
two episodes.
So that all kind of fits with that flow of like starting with the core and then working outward mm-hmm. to expand it. And we do know that they are, you know, doing a second season. They're already filming it. So
yeah,
that's good news. And who knew that Disney would be the political streaming service of the moment? Because Andor is back next week too. So we have the Daredevil Andor double punch.
We got two big anti-fascist shows on, which does feel relevant at this time. On Disney Plus, who would have thought? Also, I gotta say, just apart from the politics of it, there's a moment in the finale. I'm gonna spoil this, so just I'm not going to, where the Kingpin Fisk, like, it's extremely Mountain and Oberyn, like, crushes a dude's head with his hands, and it is much more violent and brutal than the Game of Thrones bit, which I did not see coming.
Okay.
On a Disney Plus show, I don't know, like, we see the blood gouge out and the jaw break. Like, I didn't have that on my Daredevil Born Again bingo card.
Watch this with your children.
Don't do it. Well, I mean, if you're cool, I guess, watch it with your kids, but otherwise, no.
Yeah.
So yeah, the show actually does go fairly hard. So kudos.
All right. That seems like a thing they really set out to do. They were like, look, we know people are concerned that it's Disney now. It won't be as brutal as the Netflix one. So we need to make sure that we dispel that beyond a shadow of a doubt. And it sounds like they did, because
which I kind of rolled my eyes at when the guy was saying that, but I don't know. I guess he pulled through. So yeah. Fine. I can't be that mad at you.
Fair. This cracks me up. So, Victor, Daredevil and Fisk as Disney characters is such a weird sentence. Here's another one. The Alien and the Predator, Disney mascots. Because that throws me every time I remember that they're funded by Disney now. But yeah, so glad to hear Daredevil was good. Did you see what else is on right now? Have you seen the finale of The White Lotus?
Yeah. I mean, we're usually a... because we have a lot of people in the chat. We here at Winter Take the Black do sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, and books. It includes all kinds. The White Lotus is kind of a little outside of our umbrella, but yeah, I saw it.
Yeah.
I liked it. Walton Goggins and his British girlfriend died. It's too bad.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. It was another downer. It was a tragedy, but I enjoyed this season of that show a lot. I liked it more than the last season.
Good. I'm glad for you.
Yeah, thank you.
I watched The Righteous Gemstones. That's a good one. Love that show. I'm going to miss it when it's gone. John Goodman, Danny McBride, Edie Patterson. Funny. Ooh,
good cast.
Bible Belt, Mega Preachers. That is a funny show.
Cool. What is there anything else you're watching? Have we arrived at the end of our watch list for the week?
We covered a lot, man.
We did.
Think it's time to go into the Wick News lightning round, where we go over a bunch of stories we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions. No more, no less. But if we have more or less, it's probably fine.
Okay. All right. So let's start with you, Dan, because I have nothing but poisonous, hateful opinions about this news.
I love asking about Harry Potter.
Oh God, there are a few things I hate more than talking about Harry Potter. But I'm gonna make you talk about it. So Lithgow, Papa Asaidu, Janet McTeer, Nick Frost, Luke Thallon, and Paul Whitehouse are officially the first cast members of HBO's Harry Potter television show.
Yep, and I think they're playing from top left to the right. Dumbledore, the McGonagall, Snape, Hagrid, and then the final two are Fisk, the evil janitor, and then Quirrell, the first Vincent Dark Harry professor.
Yeah.
Fine. Yay. Good for you. We'll see it when it comes on HBO, whenever. Hey, Daniel.
Wow, you sounded as jaded as me.
I did not. I asked about this, you back. Sound like hate is just oozing from your pores. Like, whatever, it's fine.
That's true.
Daniel.
Yes.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge is making a Tomb Raider show for Amazon starring Game of Thrones veteran Sophie Turner as Lara Croft. But according to inside sources, it's no longer happening.
Yeah, so Sophie Turner was reportedly in talks to play Lara Croft in the Phoebe Waller-Bridge Tomb Raider show. The big story with this is that Amazon has invested millions in this show and they don't even have a script for it. That's kind of been the thing. They signed Phoebe Waller-Bridge to this multi-year deal where they're paying her millions and so far nothing has come out of it. So that's kind of the running joke, as it were. Sorry to Sophie Turner, who was always a weird cast for Lara Croft, but we love you still.
She's a British woman. What difference? Okay, never mind.
All right, Dan. All right. We don't need to put all the British women into the boxes that say you are Lara Croft because you're British. Although we can if you want to. This is news I know you're psyched about. Interview with the Vampire season 3 will premiere in 2026. Here's a poster.
Yeah, I loved the first two seasons of this show. I think it has an anarchic, dense, wicked sense of humor and crackling drama. I love the cast. Jacob Anderson from Game of Thrones is in it as Louis, and a dude named Sam Rita's Lestat who tears it up 24/7. I'll watch it. I'll love it. It's going to be a musical. This is so up my alley. I can't even talk about it.
Yeah. Okay.
Daniel,
yeah, tell me the news.
Netflix has renewed the Devil May Cry show for season 2. How you feeling about it?
I feel a little torn, honestly. I will watch it. I've been on a Devil May Cry kick since watching it because I do love these games very, very much. But yeah, it got an early renewal for season 2 already. So they are clearly going all in. It must have done really well for them. So Craig, in the chat, you can watch without fear that it is canceled and you will get to see what happens next, because season 1 did end on a cliffhanger. All right, Dan. So Doctor Who, I think, is back soon too, right?
Already back.
It's Doctor Who is already back. However, showrunner Russell T. Davies, says that he thinks there, quote, might be a pause for the series on the horizon.
It does feel like enthusiasm for Doctor Who has waned in a pretty serious way over the past few years. So I wouldn't be shocked if it again went into one of its hibernation periods. Mm. It's been on the air for like over half a century. It can probably survive a few years off until someone finds again, like a reason for it to be again.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of missing that right now. Daniel, there's a new TV show coming to Apple TV Plus called Murderbot, and you're excited about it. What's the deal?
I am so excited about it. Stars Alexander Skarsgård as the Murderbot. These are based on books by Martha Wells, really popular sci-fi books. And it's like a comedic sci-fi. Basically, this android kind of has hacked its own system so that it is sentient and free, but it still needs to pretend like it is following orders, and it loves watching soap operas, and is just trying to understand its place in the universe.
Cool.
Yeah, the trailer looked so fun. All right, Dan, the best Godzilla movie in quite a while, Godzilla Minus One, it's getting a direct sequel.
Woohoo, from Toho. I gotta admit, I watched Godzilla Minus One, I guess because everyone was like saying it's like this amazing, incredible thing. Maybe I went in with too high expectations. I liked it. I thought it was nice. I thought it was cool. I enjoyed the movie. I don't know. I was expecting to have a religious experience and to worship Godzilla as my personal god. But I enjoyed it, and I'm glad it's getting a sequel.
Fair. Fair on all fronts.
And finally, Daniel, premier A-list actress Florence Pugh is coming back as Princess Irulan for Dune Part 3, which starts filming this summer in a desert.
Yeah, in the desert. This should be no surprise to anyone who's read Dune Messiah. The second Dune movie teed Princess Irulan up to be in the next one a lot more. She's married to Paul Atreides, Timothée Chalamet. We knew she was coming back, but she's confirmed it. The more exciting thing for me is that it's going to start filming soon, this summer, which means I guess we'll watch Dune Part 3 next year. which is wild. Crazy. So soon.
I mean, the last one came out, what, last year? Was it?
Yes, it was last year.
Not that bad.
I feel like that's a fast turnaround.
For a major movie? Yeah.
Yeah, that's like faster than most TV shows. Where are we?
That's a good point. Where are we? So, of course, when we come to it, in the meanwhile, we will be bringing you all of the hottest takes, occasionally ice cold, but still thrilling takes, news, perspectives on all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, television, and books here at Take the Black, where we have a live show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, 3 p.m. on the East Coast, and noon on the West Coast, and 1 p.m. in the mountains. I think I've forgotten you mountain dwellers. join us. Also, you can download us to listen on the go, at the gym, in the car, wherever podcasts are available. We are there. Subscribe to the channel. What else do you have to do? It's very easy. Ring the bell. Come back. Leave your comments. We love it. Talk with us. Visit winteriscoming.net or winteriscoming.com. They go to the same place where we write about all these things. And if I'm more articulate. And that's about it, man. Good seeing you. Good talking to you. We'll see you next week. And have a lovely evening. Bye.
Yeah. Enjoy the Wheel of Time finale, everyone.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.